Just a small town girl, living in a lonely world. She took the midnight train going anywhere. Just a city boy, born and raised in South Detroit. He took the midnight train going anywhere.
Done. Yeah. Thank you. We practiced.
I love the first guy.
I want to keep going.
That's the quartet. You want to keep on going? Hit the chorus. Yeah. That was great, guys. Thank you so much.
It's the message, right? That's the big one we're trying to pump out there. Don't stop believing, right?
I'm sure when I spoke to you, Hunter, you're like, I told you, don't forget the singing, right? Like,
yeah.
You were like, what are you talking about? It's a construction podcast. No, it's our thing we've been doing since day one, right?
So yeah.
It just kind of stuck, and then we just force everybody.
Yeah.
There's been a handful that said no. They won't, like three.
Oh, wow.
But they regret it.
Yeah.
It's a good icebreaker.
Yeah.
Because it puts people out of their comfort zone, and then it lightens it up for the rest
of
it.
For sure.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's fun, you know? And it's a big time commitment, though. That was hours of rehearsal to get to that point.
Was it really?
For that delivery right there.
Well, welcome, everybody, to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm so glad that Steve, he's the one that connected us. That's the Kevin Bacon there. And,
right.
And we got talking on the phone, and then here we are. And we're going to have a really good, interesting conversation about, I guess, just brain injuries and what happens to us as a human being and all walks of life, right?
Yep. Right?
Obviously, it happens in construction. And then off mic, we were just talking about motor vehicle. But anything with the cabeza, right? Anything with the head there, right? So I want everybody to introduce themselves and I guess your official titles when you guys are working there. That'd be great.
Sure. So my name's Ashley Budd. I am the clinical services manager with Mind Forward.
Hi, my name's Hunter Sager, and I'm the chief executive officer, but I've only been there 2 months. So I have great people here to further our message. So I'll pass you on to Andrea.
I'm Andrea Ewer. I'm the director of public relations and community services.
All right. I'm Mike Redgers. I'm the director of operations and assisted living.
Okay, so I guess at first, let me do a quick shout out to the boys at Custom and Quality. I'm wearing his tee, and it's actually used because I like it. Mm-hmm. So it's got some Portuguese luck, which is also known as PL, on it, and I'm fine with that. Doesn't bother me. But why did you guys get into this space?
For myself, I started out working with young offenders in the judicial system, and I really wanted to help the kids and was really, that's not the mandate there really, unfortunately. It was kind of a downfall to care. So I left that and then just kind of stumbled upon, this agency 19 years ago now, and knew nothing about brain injuries. Started working frontline on the floor and kind of worked my way up. And now it actually affects me both in my personal life as well as my professional life because my brother actually sustained a brain injury. He was driving a dump truck and it rolled over. That was kind of construction related too. So
was he thrown out?
No, just a series of events and had to be extracted and those types of things. But he's doing okay, which is great. But
How old was he when he had?
This was 11 years ago. So he was, oh my gosh, I don't know.
I know. I have no idea what
he's like 40 something, I think.
Okay.
When it happened.
And he's doing okay now?
Yeah. He's all right.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Hunter?
So this is like sort of my second career. I was 37 years in the government, in the provincial government. Lastly, as the CAO of Ontario Place. I was looking for positions. I actually ended up being on the board here at Mind Forward.
Okay.
Through friends who introduced me to the board chair, and I got on the board. Then when this opening came up, I went through a certain amount of interviews and things, and somehow I've just ended up here. And I'm very happy to be here. Fantastic staff who really care. At the front end, you would not believe the service this agency provides. It's very impactful to a very vulnerable clientele.
How long has Mind Forward been around?
1892.
Yeah.
1892?
Yeah, 32 years.
And it was started by whom?
It was started as part of a long-term care initiative, okay. Ministry of Health, right, okay. through there. There was a lady by the name of Carol Bintz, who was the first CEO.
Carol Williams.
Carol Williams? Oh, sorry. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, she started as a grassroots movement.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Very passionate, connected to ABI personally herself, and she really forged this organization, started with one small home, treating a very small population. And it's grown to a service capacity of nearly 500 now. You know, she did an incredible job, amazing advocate for the space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have over 200 employees, 5 group homes. We span across Peel, Halton, and Dufferin region, so we go right up into Shelburne.
It's a big area.
It's a really big area, yeah.
Okay.
So there are 5 homes. One is here in Oakville. Which has the most complex cases in all of Ontario.
Okay.
And then 3 are in Mississauga, and 1 is on the border of Brampton-Mississauga. But we cover Halton, all of Halton, Peel, and up to Dufferin.
Okay. And then, Andrea, just, I guess, one of your duties and everything?
Yeah, sure. So I joined the organization in 2006, is that 18 years ago? I've been with the company for 18 years. I started, actually, I guess from a child, I was really, intrigued by, there was a little boy in my class, in grade 1, I was in grade 4 at the time, and he had Down syndrome. And so they were asking for volunteers to eat lunch with him, and I volunteered, and I would go hang out with him for recess because going out in the field was too much stimulation for him. So I really formed a bond with him, and that experience left an imprint on me. And I went to university for, at the time, CSI was big. So I did like sociology, crime and deviance.
Okay.
And realized that I wasn't cut out for it because the sight of blood made me wheezy. So I started working in university at Community Living Mississauga, so developmental disabilities, worked in a group home there, loved it, and decided that this is the field I wanted to be in. So one thing led to another, applied to Mind Forward, started Frontline, as Ashley did, as a relief staff, mm-hmm. working in the group homes, and over the years, continued to grow in the organization to where I am now.
Nice.
Yeah, so I've been with the organization for 15 years. Prior to that, my background was in mental health. Like Ashley was talking herself, I have multiple personal connections to brain injury within my family and within my circle of friends. And at the time, I had an individual who was very close to me that sustained a brain injury and was potentially going to be brought into service and care by our organization. And that was a big piece of what actually brought me over to Mind Forward at the time, was the potential of being frontline and working with him through his rehabilitation journey.
So I'd love for you guys to, because obviously I don't know the information that you guys have, but I mean, and I haven't experienced all that. And we've had people on the show before where we're talking about these very traumatic situations that happen in people's lives. And one that connects with me is I've got a neighbor who's 10 years younger than me. And unfortunately, he became a very successful chartered accountant, became a very successful international chartered accountant, started living the high life in New York, and then started doing the partying, and we all know where this is going. And then he got hooked onto all kinds of drugs and narcotics, and he basically baked his brain. Yeah. And now he's in a care facility where his dad just literally wishes that he would just pass. And he's a 41-year-old man. And he's in a wheelchair bound daily, taken care of. And the doctors have said his brain is half of it is gone. Like he just does not, he's aware of some, but he's not aware of most. And that's where some people are going. And I guess, but we also talk about accidents in general, right? You guys have seen people on the job site, off the job site, what have you. So, I mean, I guess, can you guys give us an overview of what can happen? And when we forget to protect our head, like what possibly might happen. But then there's also, I guess, genetically speaking, things can happen, mm-hmm. and then drug and abuse, and that could happen, that kind of world.
I think there's just an element, you know, to begin the discussion around just there's a lack of awareness and education out there about head injuries and concussion in general. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we're trying to work and advocate on and really bring to the forefront is you know, how fragile your brain really is. And there are so many injuries that you can sustain to your brain from so many different activities or involvement. Drugs is something that we see very common. We work with a lot of individuals who have overdosed. Yeah. We work with a lot of individuals who've sustained their injuries from utilizing drugs or alcohol and falling and hitting their head multiple times. We have an individual that comes to mind who fell down a flight of stairs. Intoxicated one night, young gentleman in school, going to be, you know, highly successful individual. And not to say that he wasn't, he's just changed that capacity, but he fell down a flight of stairs and sustained his injury. And he's been in, was in service with us for over probably 20 years, struggling to live independently in the community, a lot of family struggles and problems. You know, there's an interesting piece that always comes when you talk about addiction and you know, there's a huge comorbidity between mental health, addiction, and brain injury. Yeah. When we look at the three, we just did a presentation at the Hamilton Health Science Conference on those comorbidities. And one of the statements that always really resonates with me and sticks out that hopefully resonates with other people is isolation breeds addiction, and addiction breeds isolation. And it's this vicious circle that people get in. And if you know anybody that's struggling with you know, addiction, you know, it's definitely, you know, you want to engage them. You want to be there for them.
Reach out.
You don't want to let them sit in a dark corner. Yeah. Try to connect them with
supports. Don't
let a week
go by.
You got it.
Yeah. A lot of that happens, especially in construction as well. A lot of, I mean, I guess during the pandemic years, a lot of things amplified. And a lot of people weren't sure of what to do, right?
Yeah, the pandemic was very difficult on people's mental health.
Yeah, I can imagine. And that made you guys more aware of it. You saw it frontline at that point, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
We have a community-based program, and obviously because of the pandemic, we had to shut down a lot of our programs, but we tried to maintain that one because we recognized how important those touch points were with our clients that were living independently. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of them, they've even, like, countless times they've expressed to us that we're the only face that they'll see on a weekly basis.
I've said it before, where they probably would go out to society, but they honestly feel invisible.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Like they literally feel like they're just walking through a ghost town because no one's really visually connecting with them.
Yeah.
And that's hard.
And it's funny you use the word invisible because we call brain injury the invisible disability because it's so hard to tell. Somebody could look completely normal, speak normally, like physically they look normally, but there's a lot going on up here that we don't see.
How serious should we take it? So if something does happen and you, like I think I was saying off mic, when I had my first motorcycle accident, I vividly remember my head tapping on the pavement several times, right? And that was my helmet preventing my head from actually doing any damage, right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, on a job site or even in a scenario, if you see someone hit their head and they still get up and they're fine, or like how serious should we take that moment?
I think that you always want to proceed with a level of caution, even with what happened to you. Like you had a helmet on when you fell off your motorcycle, and that, you know, helped you.
I was still
you.
Brought to the hospital. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But that helped you with not sustaining like some superficial damage, cuts and bruises and things necessarily to the, you know, to your external skull. But internally, your brain's still being rattled. Your brain's still being, you know, shaken. And I think that we need to be very aware there's so many different levels of concussions that can be sustained, multiple different levels of injuries. There's one that's called a dendrite axonal injury, so DAI. And if we think about the brain is made up of two different matters. It's white matter and gray matter.
Yeah.
And we have these axons, which essentially are we think about these as like spaghetti noodles. And they intersect the brain. They go through different matters. And we have more axons, more neurons in different matters of the brain. So we have gray matter, white matter. And if you think about velocity and movement, because they weigh different, they move at a different rate and they'll stop at a different rate. So if you drop a 5-pound weight and a 20-pound weight, one's going to fall to the ground faster than the other. Well, it's no different than your brain. So if you're in an accident or you do something that really jars your head, when your brain suddenly moves forward inside your skull and stops, that white matter and gray matter, they're going to accelerate and decelerate at different rates. And what that does is it causes a shearing effect between the axons that run in between those different types of matter in the brain. So if you think about spaghetti noodles, we always talk about, is at a certain point in time, if you take that spaghetti noodle and start bending it, it's going to break and it's going to snap. So even those like jarring motions where that repeated head injury where the brain is shifting back and forth inside the skull, that can cause, you know, damage over time.
And then what are you going to see? Swelling soon after? Or
so it's very hard to see the actual like internal injuries. Typically right through a very specific MRI, you'll see like bulbing or swelling around the dendrites and the axons, and that'll identify some concerns. It may not be till later on that we start to see like just this, that area essentially is dead. You know, and it takes a long period of time before we're able to identify through imaging that there's actually been a traumatic injury to that area of the brain.
Well, you were going to say something.
I was just going to say in terms of like, well, in your case, it was pretty serious. So of course you went to the hospital, but something, you know, a sports injury, hitting your head on scaffolding or something on the job site, right? So it's always recommended to see a doctor, but in the immediate, like aftermath, definitely resting, you know, physical and mental rest, limiting screen time, those kinds of things are extremely important, but always consulting with your physician just to get checked out, because you may feel fine, but something could be going on.
And our service is only triggered after that diagnosis.
Yeah.
So prior to that diagnosis, we can't serve you. So we need that paper. And then when that happens, then Ashley kicks in.
Am I fair to say that men are more reluctant to go look for care than women because men are stupid?
Yeah. You nailed it.
Basically. Yeah. We're just saying we'll just walk it off, right?
And yeah. Men are more at risk of brain injury because they're more risk takers, right? So exactly. That's your double-edged sword there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they should pay attention if something did happen, and just even if they don't feel different, they should just go and have a look.
Absolutely. I mean, I can provide a much more tangible example. We have a gentleman that we work with, beautiful man, and he was working in a mechanic shop, and he just getting up from working underneath the car, he smashed his head on the door. The door was open, and he ended up sustaining two injuries like that. And again, thinking I've just hit my head, not a big deal, but over time that those compounding injuries, just two, has completely shifted his life. He's no longer able to work, and has multiple challenges that face him. He's done incredible and recovered and changed his life and trajectory of his life, but simply just, you know, and I don't want to minimize that by saying simply, but you know, he hit his head twice just on the job
site.
Was
it like he hit the first one and just dismissed it, and it was a bump at that point, and then the second one just compounded it?
So he got hit the first time. He did go to the doctors. He felt off. He sustained a concussion, and but again, didn't think too much about it. And similar injury happened again, and again, if you're not fully recovered from a concussion, they kind of layer on top of one another. So it can magnify the severity. And yeah, it's definitely something you want to get checked out. It's not something to play around with.
Is the brain, like you guys would know more of this. I mean, is it such a lack of defense? Like the body has certain areas that could protect itself, or if a bone breaks, we know how that heals, right? And you almost wish a bone instead of a sprain, right? But when it comes to the brain, it's just got the skull protecting it, right? But like you're saying, that it's just floating around inside there. That's all it's doing.
Yep.
And then if you're not designed to do what other animals can do because they have a different type of skull that protects their brain. Human beings were not designed to hit their head somehow, some way.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
If you think about that, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the football movie, I think it was Mike Webster.
Yeah.
And you
the
see
concussion,
that.
The whole story with
that
NFL.
Whole story. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what this is all about. Right?
I was fascinated by it. Like you start talking about, you know, rams, and you start talking about a woodpecker, and you start talking about all these different animals. They're designed to take those impacts.
Right.
Human beings were not designed to take those impacts. Right.
Yeah. No, not at all.
And you see, it's changed football completely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Completely. Like, you know, if there's even a bell rung, you know, I'm old. So in our days, you say, just walk it off.
Right? Yeah.
And now, you know, they're so serious. You're straight into the tent and you're looking at that. And because it's serious, it'll impact the rest of that person's life. And a lot of the players are struggling in later life, as you can see.
So when you guys get patients coming to you, there's a whole process involved in this, right? So how does that all work?
So when someone is interested in pursuing services with us, they either themselves, clients can self-refer, their medical practitioner, if they have an external rehab team, whomever it is, will complete an application for service, which gets sent to me. So I oversee and manage our intake department as part of my role. And then, as Hunter was alluding to earlier, we do require medical documentation to support the primary diagnosis of the brain injury. So that typically would come from a CT scan, an MRI. And once I receive all of that information and review all of the documentation, I'll then move forward with an intake assessment. So I meet with the applicant as well as their family, referring agents, whomever's involved with that individual, and complete an intake assessment. And then there's a little bit, depending on what service they're requesting, then they would be subsequently approved for whichever services are appropriate for them. And for our day program, I'm sure Andrea might talk a little bit, or I can, about our services after. But for instance, for our day program, we don't have a wait list currently. So we are able to bring clients into service right away. So at the time of intake. And then for other services like case management or supported independent living, seniors, those types of things, there are various different wait lists for those programs. But at least we can get our folks involved with some sort of programming right away if they're interested.
And we shouldn't really joke here, because I could see, I mean, myself in my 20s, I would bring a friend into you guys, you know what I mean? Mm. Just as a joke, but...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't pass a screening anyway.
That's what I mean. You guys have a procedure that it's required that this has to be valid. It's not a joke that someone's just coming in and I've got a headache or something like that. Yeah. No, this is taking it to a different level.
Yeah, right? And the tricky part when we talk a lot about concussion, so a concussion is considered a mild traumatic brain injury. And by no means do I mean that that's insignificant. It's just that's how it's categorized when it comes to funding. So we at Mind Forward are funded for moderate to severe brain injuries. So I've had a lot of experiences with folks who have applied for service with us that because they have a concussion, and a concussion isn't typically demonstrated on traditional neuroimaging, so being a CT scan or an MRI, we weren't able to bring them into service based on that requirement. So we actually currently have a grant for a concussion program where we are doing some concussion education as well as support groups. And ideally, that would provide the individual with the support that they require. If they require additional support after that, we kind of assess those on a case-by-case basis. But that is some movement that we've been able to make in getting this grant for concussion, so we can also broaden our scope of service as well. And then, as I mentioned, so from a funding perspective, when we're talking about moderate to severe brain injuries, those would be things that would be identified on the traditional neuroimaging.
I'm sure you guys remember Natasha Richardson, right? Liam Neeson's wife?
Yes.
The skiing accident, right? That was a mild concussion, right? Is that a study that comes up with you guys? Like, is that a case that can happen? I mean, she was just skiing.
It can happen, and we have clients that we provide service to right now who have sustained their injuries from skiing, from tobogganing at a young age. Yeah. Anything that you can think of, we provide services to the individuals. They've been through it: car accidents, strokes, traumatic events, overdoses, assaults. Skiing, biking. Biking's a big one. We have a lot of individuals that have sustained their injuries through just cycling on the road.
With the helmet on?
With the helmet on.
Yeah. With the helmet on.
Yeah. Yep.
And the helmet is what saved their lives. If they didn't have the helmet on, they wouldn't be with us today.
Wow.
And I think that is sometimes can be a misconception that helmets are, everybody should wear helmets when they're doing anything like that. But helmets are there to protect your head, but they're not always going to they're not going to prevent everything from happening.
Yeah. Like a long-term kind of cause and effect with it, right? Yeah. Basically. Yeah.
Excuse me. So as Mike was saying, with some of these individuals, the helmet saved their life.
Yeah.
But then they did still have a concussion as a result, or some
Are there some repairable situations?
Yes, definitely. But when people come into the service, as I've learned over the last 2 months, is they're with us like forever. They don't pay for this service. We're fully funded by Ontario Health. Mm-hmm. There's various programs, and Andrea can tell you a little more about the programs. But, you know, as Ashley was saying, like day program, like what is that? That's just basically a program where the clients will come in the morning and they'll go through some activities. Maybe you want to elaborate on that.
Yeah, sure. So certainly, so somebody comes into service and they go through the intake process and we identify what services they're applying for, but also what is appropriate for them. So our day program, every client in the organization is welcome to join that program. It's 5 days a week. We have a head office location in Mississauga right by Square One. We have a satellite site in Halton as well as up in Orangeville. So it provides social and recreational activities with facilitators. There's, I believe, 9 staff in total in that program, but also functional skills training. So you've got cooking groups. Clients learn how to play instruments. A lot of art therapy, pet therapy, gardening groups, things like this. We have a beautiful building in Mississauga that backs onto the Cooksville Creek. It's like a little oasis right in downtown Mississauga. So beautiful garden back there that the public can enjoy. We've got seniors programs. So this is where we have a team of staff. We call them neurobehavioral support workers. We work with long-term care facilities. So what we see is, you know, and when you think of LTC and older adults, aging diseases like dementia and Alzheimer's, right? So there's a lot of relationship between brain injury and those, another comorbidity between dementia and Alzheimer's. So
do you guys work with them?
So we'll work with those clients, but also clients that like sustained an acquired brain injury and let's say we're blocking a bed, that we call them bled blockers, but they're ALC, alternative level of care. So there's nowhere for them to go because of their complex needs might present with some inappropriate behaviors, things like this, aggressive physical behaviors. So they're in a hospital. Some of them in some cases are bedbound, restrained, right? So with our services, these individuals are able to move into long-term care facilities with our support. So as you know, in LTCs, they're already, the staffing ratios is extremely high.
So
that's right. So PSWs, they have a behavioral support staff, I believe one individual in the entire facility that supports these residents, but will come in and we'll augment the support there. So we're providing that engagement to, as we talked about, isolation, right? So just to keep them engaged so they have something to do. But also because of their behaviors, they're at risk of losing their placement in long-term care facilities because the staff there just can't manage them. Yeah. So we have a team in one facility in Milton, Allendale Long-Term Care Facility. We have staff there five days a week, multiple staff that supports multiple individuals in the organization just so that they aren't essentially getting kicked out, right? Because of behaviors that just can't be managed. That's our seniors program. We've also got a supported independent living program, and this is the program that Mike referred to about the presentation between the relationship between addiction, mental health, and brain injury. Mm-hmm. So these are people that are living alone in the community, but they just need a little bit of support in order to be there, to be successful independently. So that means that maybe we're coming and making sure they're taking their medications every day, or they're getting some help with grocery shopping or scheduling or attending medical appointments. There's a lot of like organizing things like consultation with our psychiatrist. We have a vast clinical team. We have a lot of services, but really these are individuals that, like I said, these are the people where that term invisible disability really comes into play because, you know, you see them walking down the street, you have a conversation with them, everything seems fine, but they just, because of their brain injury, they just...
Mm-hmm. You know, do you guys tackle, I guess, does MAID come up?
So it has come up a couple of times.
You guys talk about how much you want to talk about it. Yeah. I know everybody has their opinion about it and what is going on. But I just assume that it comes up.
It does come up. We as an organization have taken a stance where, we're committed to rehabilitation. We want to help move people forward, and we want to help people rebuild their lives, not taking away from the value of MAID, but that's a very personal choice to that individual. We unfortunately won't go for the ride down that path with them as up to date right now. Things may change in the future, but our focus is improving their lives, really moving them forward, focusing on rehabilitation, You know, our key principles are, you know, hope and community, and those are things that we really focus on and we want to instill in anybody coming to our organization.
I just assume stats, everything's going up. I'm assuming that senior and dementia and Alzheimer's and injuries, everything is going up. I don't think anything's going down. Am I wrong?
You're correct.
Absolutely right. Correct.
Everything's going up. Just like quick stats, we know that even a couple of years ago, we had over 500,000 people in Ontario with brain injuries.
Just Ontario.
Just Ontario. And that's not even concluding concussions. Those are serious. And I'm not saying concussions are not serious, to
this
echo
is,
what
this
Ashley
is
said.
What, last year? Or?
This is a couple of years ago. But we also know that like over 100,000 people sustain brain injuries per year. Again, and that's Canada-wide. Roughly 45,000 yearly in Ontario. I think right now they're talking about one person sustains a brain injury every 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. Is I think where we're at right now. It's huge. Brain injury again is one of the things we talked about before. It's not discussed. It's not out there. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows about cancer, heart and stroke, but people don't know about head injuries. And you know, if we look at annual incidences, there's more ABI, more acquired brain injuries, than multiple sclerosis, spinal cord injuries, HIV, and breast cancer combined into one.
Really?
ABI, traumatic brain injuries, it's an epidemic. Yeah. It touches people. I believe the other statistic is like one in every three people either know or have sustained a brain injury. Somebody with a brain injury or
is this a problem?
For some people,
distraction and being put into a situation. I hate seeing any tradespeople on this while there's machinery going on. Mm-hmm. I have a problem with loud music on a site too. I have a problem with distractions. That's what I have a problem with.
100%. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have multiple people that we provide services to that have sustained their injuries well in the construction site. Yeah. From objects falling above, hitting them in the head.
Yeah.
I have a gentleman personally that I know that fell 20 feet. He was a pipe layer. And he fell 20 feet onto his head. And it's you know, it just takes one small piece.
He didn't have his lid on at that point then.
No, he didn't. And what would have realistically, even what Ashley said, the construction helmets, I mean, if he fell 20 feet with his construction helmet,
wouldn't
have helped much.
No.
And these individuals, their lives have totally drastically been changed.
So I guess the question is like, it's the repairing. I want to discuss a little bit more about how you guys facilitate the repairing aspects of it. I guess it's case by case,
absolutely,
situation by situation. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if you guys want to touch upon it, I guess some success stories, some people that have healed.
Yeah, we can definitely talk about some individuals. I think it's important to highlight, like you said, everything in this realm and going down this field is very individualistic. Mm-hmm. All of our programming, everything we do with our clients, with our patients, it is all case by case. There's nothing is duplicated. Our services are customized to the individual's needs that come in. You know, everybody I'm sure has heard about the term like neurogenesis. It's been a pretty fancy term that's been floated around. You know, just because somebody does sustain a brain injury doesn't mean that like they're always going to remain the same. Are they going to necessarily 100% recover to baseline? Probably not. But that's depending on the injury. Our focus is much more on the rehabilitation side of things. So if you're in the hospital and you have the acute care that you need from a medical basis, mm-hmm. You know, we're there to then help you move forward in your life. And a lot of that, it really depends again on the individual. One story that I can talk about very quickly that we presented at the conference a couple of weeks ago, we had a woman that came into service, lovely human being, and she sustained her injury through a series of falls due to alcoholism. And when we came into service with her, she was utilizing EMS and hospital services roughly 10 times a month. So when we first were collecting some baseline data, she was going, she was needing either EMS calls or going to the hospital, a combination of both, about 33 times in the first 3 months. Wow. And that was before us, before we were able to implement like programming. And this was a piece again where she was isolated, she had no family, and she filled her days by drinking, self-medicating after her injury, and things just progressed. When our staff first went there to work with her the first day, you know, our teams are incredible. They have a ton of training. I have to give a ton of credit to what our frontline teams do. They're absolutely mm-hmm. amazing individuals, mm-hmm. huge hearts, and there's just a keen sense and intuition, and this just kind of speaks to it. They they went to her apartment, knocked on the door, no answer. And they just knew something was off. They just had a sense in their gut that something was wrong. And instead of just walking away, like a lot of other people would have done, they stood by the door for a couple of minutes because this was unusual. And they could hear just a faint, really faint sound in the apartment. And again, that triggered them to then open the mail slot. And when they did that, they saw this woman lying in a pool of blood. She had fallen and split her head open,
wow.
Hit her head on the counter on the way down. They were able to call EMS get the landlord there and provide emergency first aid to her. That created a very, very tight bond. And as Hunter was saying earlier, we see our clients through everything. Once you're with us and with, you know, you're a family member, we don't leave. We're there through the whole ride. That team went with her to the hospital. They stayed with her for the entire hospital visit. While she was rehabbed and healed in the hospital, they were there. When she came home, we were there. And we moved to a period over a couple of months where I believe 6 months later, she had used and needed EMS services once. And then a year after that date, she hadn't used EMS services or gone to the hospital once. Again, it just speaks to not only were there rehabilitation programming implemented with her, but it just speaks to, again, building that connection, instilling that hope again, in the individual. And that's what we do every day. That's not what I do. I can't take credit for this stuff, but that's what our
can, because I think I can speak for all of us when I say that we've all been in almost that exact same mm-hmm. situation. I recall a time, 10, maybe more, 15 years ago, walking into a very similar situation. We had to have the landlord let us into the apartment because the individual wasn't answering the door. And he hadn't responded for, I think it was 4 days. And typically we connect with him at least once a day. See, he was an alcoholic. And when we got into the apartment, we saw broken glass everywhere, feces smeared everywhere. We couldn't find him. And I remember I was with a coworker because we never go into these situations alone, right? And terrified to go into his bedroom because we didn't know what we were going to walk into. And we walked in and I saw his feet and they were like, I'll never forget the shade of his skin. And as we walked in closer, I saw his face and he was turned away and we said his name and he slowly just looked over at us and he said, help. So we called 911, EMS arrived. And I am happy to say that he is thriving now. It's been a long journey, but he's in a long-term care facility now. Still receiving our support because we're never leaving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. And I think that's a differentiator. I don't want to go too far off what you had asked us, but to elaborate on that, it's because of the services that we have, we're able to provide services at the get-go and see you through the entire journey. Mm-hmm. So if that means that, you come into one of our inpatient facilities and work with us there, move into the community, we have the capacity to provide supports there. If it means you're going to transition into an LTC, we're going to be with you in the LTC. And that's what I'm really proud of. We as an organization, unlike others and not taking anything away from other people, but nobody else has that capacity to do what we do. And it's something that we're really proud of.
Is there a way to strengthen the brain? Like, is there a way to
weaken
the brain? I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. And the brain's always rerouted. Like, if there's an injury, the brain's trying to reroute itself. And the brain's trying to create new pathways for things. Just to give you one example, not to get too off topic, but this individual sustained a significant anoxic brain injury. They were residing in one of our assisted living facilities, and they had been there for a number of years. And I remember back hundreds of years ago when I started, to go to the washroom, he required the support of 3 staff because he was so aggressive. He wasn't able, he was incontinent. He didn't know when he had to go to the bathroom. And then over years of training and one, our philosophy when it comes to our programming is really structure, consistency, and engagement. So from a consistent training approach, over a number of years, we were then able to have it where he would then go to the bathroom by himself. We would have scheduled times when throughout the training when we would prompt him to go, and he just kind of got used to that and then was able to toilet himself independently. And from having to go from requiring the support of three staff to go to the bathroom to be able to do that on your own. That was a huge win for him and a huge gain. But so back to your question, there's lots of different activities that you can do.
I'm just assuming it takes longer though. It's
not an overnight solution. Mm-hmm. You have to be patient with it, which is a struggle for a lot of our folks. And just because it's not something that you're going to see overnight.
No.
But I was at a talk recently, and there was a psychologist speaking, and she was talking about, there's a lot of talk about neuroplasticity and various different things. And she was talking about keeping your brain engaged in things. And so a lot of people, and myself included, kind of thought that, you know, if you like to do crossword puzzles, and especially as we're all getting older, keep doing crossword puzzles and keep, that'll kind of keep your brain, that'll exercise your brain and that'll keep your brain engaged. And her response was, you actually have to learn something new.
It's novelty.
So instead of like repeating something that you already maybe enjoy or already do, kind of throwing the brain a curveball. And so I'm going to go from, doing crossword puzzles every day to learning how to play shuffleboard, just as an example.
The one that I learned a few years ago was changing your travel route to work.
Yep.
Because we're so used to going the exact same way.
Exactly.
And we're almost blind when we're just driving.
Yeah.
But you should change that route so you can think about the next right, the next left, or whatever.
Yeah. So it's challenging your brain.
Yeah.
There's a lot of statistics too in regards to daylight savings time. There's a lot of motor vehicle accidents that first week when the time changes, because everybody's just so used to, like you said, kind of almost being an autopilot. And if you're doing the same route and it's always the same, where it's when the time has changed and it's either getting darker earlier or lighter earlier, it's kind of throwing people off.
And these are things that can happen, and like, you should be doing these in your 20s, 30s, 40s. You shouldn't absolutely be waiting until something is kind of hinting, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And on top of that, what you were talking about earlier, you know, you're traveling the same route and then you have distractions, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just human nature that you would lean to that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, your coffee or you're listening to radio, whatever, it just becomes just like, you know, normal activity for you. And that's where it happens, right? If you actually, it's unfortunate. If we brought a client in here, you'd be amazed. You'd actually be amazed. Some of them are incredibly intelligent. And there's been, you know, times in these last couple of months that I've been talking to somebody and said, well, who is that staff? And they say, oh, no, that's a client. Because they're brilliant. They're you know, and they've come a long way to having, you know, postgraduate degrees, things, all kinds of things.
And post-injury degrees.
Even, yeah, post-injury.
Yeah.
I think that's the other thing to talk about where you're leading it is this affects everybody. There's not like one demographic that is excluded from this. We have people that are rocket scientists. We have people that are engineers. We have people that were doctors, students. It affects everybody, all walks of life, all professions. Some that are going to be more exposed than others, just due to the inherent risks of the job and what they do in their pastime. But everybody's, you know, doesn't exclude anybody.
Totally,
does not discriminate.
Is it more challenging for you guys when it becomes a much younger individual, a child, that sustains something?
So we don't work with children.
You don't work with no.
Part of our eligibility criteria is being over the age of 16.
Okay.
Well, so there are
a child to me.
Well, yes, but yeah. Sorry, I was
no, no. Okay, so you're working with teenagers. Yeah. So I mean, is it different?
Yeah.
It has to be different.
Yeah, and it also like we have a couple of folks who sustained their brain injuries when they were, you know, 15, 16, and now they're 40, but they still present as a 16-year-old. Uh-huh. And we see that a lot more with males than females, which is, and I don't know really the correlation there. It's just in our experience. So in some of those cases, there's a lot of, or some of the challenges that the individual might present with could be like hypersexualization and things like that. Like things that, you know, you think of like a horny teenager and, you know, how 16-year-old boys are. And then that staying with that individual, you know, all the way through their life because they're still, their brain is kind of still
16.
Yeah.
It didn't develop or it didn't.
Or like it they maybe, you know, haven't met the milestone of, because our frontal lobe is developing until we're, I think it's like 23 or 24. Yep. All of us, not like male and female.
Yeah.
But so if you sustain damage to your frontal lobe, you know, at the age of 15, 16, or even younger, or when it hasn't had the chance to develop fully, you're still going, then you're going to run into some of those impairments.
There's been a lot of work done recently by UHN, so University Health mm-hmm. Network, and they're kind of shedding a lot of light on some old thoughts and things that are actually finding to be untrue. Mm-hmm. There was some thought in the past that if you sustained your injury when you were younger, that you'd actually have a better potential like rehab journey.
To heal.
Because the thought is that at that time, you know, when you're younger, your body heals faster. When you're very young, you're still producing like neurons. You're not pruning yet. When you go into your teens, you start pruning neurons. So the neural pathways that aren't used a lot in the brain get shut down and removed just to make the brain more efficient, kind of like a computer or a internet kind of service provider. They're going to remove networks that they don't use that aren't working for them. But the team at UHN, they're discovering it's quite the opposite. And just what Ashley's saying is when a structure of the brain gets damaged when you're young, it can really impede the development of that. So if you get an injury when you're 4 or 5 years old, 8 years old, 12 years old, that neurological structure in the brain, there's a large chance that it's not going to develop the way it normally would have. And there's a big call regarding like concussion and advocacy around concussion to really, and I would appeal to everybody, be aware as to what your kids are doing.
Yeah.
You know, if your children are playing contact sports, mm-hmm. at a young age, these are things that, you know, for a long-term kind of health trajectory, it's just not needed. It's not required. You're setting them up for potential issues. The conference we were at with Dr. Mark Bailey, I believe the recommendation from their research that they were proposing was like no contact sports until 12 years of age onward. And even that was kind of being generous. They feel very, very strongly, obviously, as we do, is to, you know, you really need to protect your head and think about what you're doing.
I'm just, why the 16, that number?
For to come into service,
yeah.
That's just part of our funding.
Okay.
So it's just part of our eligibility criteria. For organization service providers across the province that are similar to us, the eligibility criteria is pretty much the same. And that was just something that's kind of been in place since the inception.
There's different specializations and funding models.
Yeah.
So typically individuals that are younger, they're going to be working within like the school systems, different funders, different like pediatric specializations.
Yeah. Developmental services sometimes as well. Just as a kind of an off point, like when it comes to Developmental Services Ontario, they have a lot more resources and funding than the brain injury community does. So oftentimes when people sustain their injuries at a younger age, they're oftentimes suggested to go through DSO, Developmental Services Ontario, just because they have more access to services and things like that. There are wonderful pediatric and programs for children, like Holland Bloorview. In Toronto, they support children with brain injuries as well. So there are a lot of resources there, but it's just for us, it's just our age criteria is 16, and then there's no cutoff on the other end. So as you know, Mike and Andrea have said, like we are, you know, if you sustain your brain injury and you come into service with us in your 20s, you're with us either until you don't want to be with us anymore or until
you pass.
I'm not a parent, but I just get the sense, like, I know that someone online was talking recently, they got rid of dodgeball, right? No more dodgeball in elementary school or whatever, mm-hmm. right? But as a kid, I remember jumping off the garage. Mm-hmm. I remember crashing bicycles several times. I remember getting hit by a car on a bicycle mm-hmm. because I was crossing the lanes illegally. I've had my share of falls, right? Mm-hmm. And I just think that sometimes are we being a little too protective or should we be this protective?
I think there's an element of like kids need to be kids.
Yeah.
That's where I'm going with it. We can't wrap everybody in bubble wrap, yeah. even though I would like to, you know, but I don't have a big enough roll of bubble wrap to do that.
Pops.
Absolutely. Yeah. It'd be like a Rice Krispies cereal, yeah. right? It'd be interesting.
Which would be good for a while.
Yeah. I think it comes down to like really, you know, looking at it with a critical lens, like what's reasonable? Like, do we need to remove dodgeball? Can we use softer balls? Do we just say like, don't throw it at people's heads, like keep it below the shoulders. If it's something like, let's take my son who's 7 years old, who loves football, you know, is it going to be a situation where I'm going to say, let's strap him up, put a helmet on him and get out there and find a league and a game for him to play like full contact? I'm going to step away from that. Mm-hmm. But when he's in the backyard and wants to climb trees or play outside, you know, I'm not going to intervene. And, you know, as much as I'd like to, it definitely sends alarm bells off in my head. But I think it's just that critical lens that you have to have. And
I think also, I also have two little girls, and it's communicating, it's talking to them, explaining the risks too. And I'm very open with my children about what I do for work. I bring them to work. I bring them to the office. Mm-hmm. And I answer their questions honestly, obviously, like I simplify it for them. But, you know, I say, you know, unfortunately, some of these accidents occurred because they weren't wearing a helmet or because, you know, they fell. So we have to be extra careful. My kids wear their helmets all the time when they're playing outside, even when they're not riding their bike sometimes.
But I think a big thing now compared to, you know, the scenario you're giving is awareness.
Yeah.
Right. Like there's not more cancer now. It's just we
know about it.
We know about it.
Yeah.
And so same thing with brain injuries, right? I go back to that football example. You were not revered for saying, oh, my head hurts, right? So now, you know, people are saying, oh my God, your head hurts. So let's get you over here and get you diagnosed. Let's check you out and all that, right? So there's just more awareness to it. I agree with you. I'm old. I come from a point where you played sports, you got hurt, get up, you know, walk it off. Let's get back in there. Right. And that's what you did.
Yeah.
I remember, I played soccer all my life. And, I remember the first time I ever heard about, players are, not, they're looking at the game in terms of like, should you head the ball? And, you know, I thought that was preposterous. Like, what are you talking about? And now there's, you know, with some of the more famous players from, you know, when I was a little kid, they've got Alzheimer's. They're like at a high rate.
There's a connection.
Yeah, there must be a connection.
Yeah.
There's also, sorry, to cut you off. So one of my mentors, he was our clinical director for such a long time. His name's Dr. Colin Pryor. Hi, Dr. Pryor. Please text me back if you're out there because I'm worried about you.
Absolutely amazing
he
man.
He is the most amazing human being in the world. And really where I kind of developed my philosophy when it comes to your question is his whole thing was all about dignity and risk. So we have to provide people the dignity to take risks, to make their own choices. Of course, provide as much education, awareness, those types of things as we can. But you can't bubble wrap the whole world. And you can't, you know, there's risk in everything that you do. You know, get in your car and leave this parking lot, you're putting yourself at risk of a motor vehicle accident, right? So it's allotting that dignity and risk to everyone.
I mean, I love that what you guys are doing, and you're helping lots of people. I mean, tens of thousands of people that you guys are helping. But isn't the underlining goal to not see so many people come through this and need this care. And I just, that's why I was earlier asking about how these stats are going up, injuries and also the brain issues with dementia and all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. How do we do that? How do we, education?
Well, yeah, absolutely, education. And one of the things, an initiative that is part of my role is really just with that community awareness piece, not only our services for brain injury survivors, but just prevention of brain injury. And Ashley does a lot of ABI in services and ABI education, acquired brain injury education. Also reaching out to donors, government funders for grants and things to be able to provide more specialized services. Like, we've brought in a psychotherapist. We have a consulting neuropsychiatrist, Dr. Sayom, who's also
wonderful.
He's incredible, and he consults to a number of brain injury organizations and works for the hospital. But he, my point is just fundraising events to increase our services, increase our reach, our impact on the community, just letting people know some of the risks and things like make sure you're wearing your helmet and these kinds of things. Anyways, where I was going with that.
Yeah, I mean, the funding has its limits, right? And there are things outside of that that we need to do. And I think that's what Andrew's talking about is, to improve programs, get out, do outreach, things like that. You know, we're not built for that right now in terms of funding. There's a small piece of that, but we'd like to do more. We'd like to get into the schools. We'd like to, talk to kids early about that, and that has to come from ourselves raising funds and providing that kind of a service. Will the numbers go down? I honestly can't imagine that. The population's going up.
It's growing.
Yeah, and so I don't think the numbers will go down. Will our services increase? I think so. Even as an aside, I'd love to have you come to our location and see. And honestly, you will be blown away.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
I bring it up because I guess I come from the construction side of things, and then we're always conscious of our protecting our head, protecting our tools, our body, because that's what our tools are. If we lose a finger, lose a hand, whatever, then we don't have a job anymore. But then you want to protect it, but then you also don't want to lose it later on in life because of something that happened. Mm-hmm. Or that's what I'm trying to figure out, is are there ways to prevent all that stuff? Because like you were saying with the soccer analogy, I totally believe that there's a connection between the two.
Yeah.
You can't continue hitting your head the same way without it having some sort of issue later on.
Right.
So
I think it has to do with, again, that education piece, advocacy. I know people don't like it. I know that a lot of these things can be headaches. I've got a good friend of mine that works at DeFasco, and he's been there for a long time. He talks about, 20 years ago when they'd have to go up on scaffolding or they'd use something, they would just climb up and they'd go do whatever they need to do. They'd be 20, 30 feet in the air. Now they want them to wear harnesses and clip in, and sometimes there's resistance to that. It's like, I've been doing this for 20 years. Like, what's the big deal? Why do we have to change this? Why have these different...
Takes one second.
It only takes one mistake, one error, right? And you may do it 20 years without any issue, but that 22nd year, you end up slipping or something goes wrong or something breaks, and now your life has totally changed. And from that health and safety piece, it's crucially important on the job site to be well aware of that. Because like you said, you got to protect your tools, and one slip up, one mistake, somebody drops something from up above, that could alter and change the course of your life, in a moment.
No, I was just saying things like those inspections and putting signage up saying if there's like toxic chemicals in the environment or things like that, I think are just small things that can be done to add that extra layer of prevention.
How's the medical side of things regarding the brain? Has it advanced greatly in Canada here specifically? Are we doing wonders now? Or I don't know. I don't know anything about this side of the...
There's always... new developments and new education and things like that. Like, for instance, when it comes to concussion, the concussion guidelines have recently changed. That comes from research and those types of things. So I think it's always evolving.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with Ashley. I think that even what we're doing just here, like locally in Ontario, you know, is amazing work. We're kind of in a luckily where we're positioned between having Toronto and Hamilton. Mm-hmm. Those are the two major hubs right now that are doing a ton of research in this field and are leading the way. You know, I would say in Canada, in the way of research and treatment. So having UHN and Hamilton Health Sciences, they're just massive powerhouses, right? And there's a lot of interest right now in the neuro field, and they're doing great work. I mentioned Dr. Bailey. He's been a big part of the concussion protocols changing with the work mm-hmm. that he's been doing. They've got a special clinic that UHN is running that's focusing on concussions. A lot of research is coming out of there, and they're changing the way that we're dealing with concussions. It's vastly different, and that's something to be very aware of and challenging. And I sympathize with all the medical practitioners as trying to keep up with all the changing yeah. landscapes and changing protocols. But for you as the individual listening, like if you do sustain an injury, a concussion, a head injury, you know, try to find what's most recent, right? Because you'll find a lot of information out there that's still dated. You'll get a lot of advice yeah. from people that's still dated. Mm-hmm. And you may be following concussion protocols and other things that are from like the 1980s that are proven not to be the best course of action.
What was it back then? Yeah. What were they suggesting back then?
You might remember the thing of like being woken up multiple times a night. So if you have a concussion, you want somebody to be waking you up mm-hmm. 2-3 times a night to make sure you're okay. That's not the case right anymore. That's been proven that that's actually an ineffective strategy. You want the person to sleep. You want them to rest. That's just a small piece. So, I remember being young and my sister ended up with a concussion and my parents having to wake her up every 2 hours, I think it was, throughout the course of the night. And they had to do it for multiple nights to check in on her. I understand that was the best that we had at the time. That was the most up-to-date research. And
the body needed to heal is what it needed.
The body needed
time.
That's
what the body does, mm-hmm. right?
Sleep mm-hmm. is crucially important. Yeah. And it's dramatically affected by people who sustain an injury, be it via concussion or more of a traumatic injury. Mm-hmm. Sleep is one of the main mechanisms for healing, but it's also one of the most challenging pieces that come from an injury. Mm-hmm.
Because of the discomfort or the concern or?
So the sleep actually, when the brain gets injured, you may be aware there's different like wavelengths and ways the brain works. You have your alpha, beta, data, down, delta waves, sorry, not data, delta waves. And when your brain gets injured, just if you think about, it's a really good analogy I can use here. If you got a circular saw that you love to use and one of the bushings in that circular saw starts to go, and you keep using it and using it and using it, it's not operating the same, doesn't have the yeah. same kind of power. And or if you have a short somewhere with an electrical circuit and you're trying to run something off of it, it's going to continue to trip a breaker or have yeah. a fault. And what you'll see with people with concussions and traumatic brain injuries is they'll go through periods where they can't sleep at all. They'll suffer from periods of insomnia, or they will sleep a lot and all they'll want to do is sleep because they're so fatigued. And that's some of the work that was coming out with Mark Bailey and what they're doing with the concussion centers with UHN. And absolutely like incredible. And a lot of that is we talked about is the education piece, is helping people understand like when you do sustain a concussion, this is what you can expect. Not to think that this is something that's abnormal that's happening, but to understand that you should be preparing and expecting, and you as a caregiver potentially knowing that, if my son, my loved one, my husband, my wife, my daughter, whoever it is, to sustain a concussion, there's a good chance that we're going to see difficulties with sleep patterns. We're going to see a challenge with mood. Mm-hmm. There may even be challenges with like eating and things like that. Mm. It changes everything. It impacts people. Like when we think of a head injury, it's something that impacts, everybody, at such a deep level. It's not just superficial. You mentioned again, your body being part of your tool. If you cut off a finger, it's terrible. But if I lose my fifth finger, I've lost my fifth finger. Is that going to impact multiple different like domains and characteristics of who I am? Probably not. Yeah. But that head injury, that's going to change, my behavior. That's going to change my personality. That's going to change how I sleep, how I eat, how I interact with the world. It covers such a huge domain.
I know, actually, earlier you were talking about the brain, the way it grows, how it forms, right, yeah. from different ages. And At what age does it start to get weak or deteriorate? Like, I don't want to get to the point where you're an elderly and you have dementia and those kinds of situations. But, I mean, does the brain get different in your 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s? Or?
Yeah, I would say. And I think it's just like with anything in your body, as you get older, you know, some things... you know, like you're, I don't know, I'm in my 40s now and just went to the eye doctor and she told me that after 40, the muscle in your eye starts to degenerate, I guess, yep. A little bit. Because she was trying to get me to get, like, bifocals. I said no.
I tried them and I threw them away.
Yeah, I was like, no, I'm way too young for that. Yeah. But so just as an example, like with anything, your brain will, you know, start to weaken in certain areas. I don't have the scientific terms in front of me, but
I'm just assuming.
You think about memory. That's a great example of as you get older, your memory starts to fade. You know, I don't know how many times I can say where, you know, I've gone into a room and thought, oh. Why am I here again? Yeah. And then, you know, you jog it. Whereas, you know, a young person would just laugh at you and say, you're getting old. Yeah, that's right.
And I think your brain. Yeah, and I think, too, like there's sometimes where as we get older, like my mom, for instance, she's, you know, in her early 80s now. And she was saying to me the other day, like, I hope I don't have Alzheimer's because I'm forgetting this. And I was like, but you're 81 years old, Mom. Like, it's okay to forget some things. Mm-hmm. So I think, too, there's almost this, like, paranoia that, you know, as soon as you start forgetting why you walked into the room or what you were doing or those types of things, that there's something wrong. So I think, like, the important message would be... you know, just to be aware of these things and try to do any sort of preventative measures that you can. So learning new things, taking new routes, like you were talking about, you know.
Like, and it's very, like, similar, a lot of the strategies, I guess, are similar to maintaining your physical health, getting enough sleep, exercising.
That's how I'm well-balanced
diet, drinking lots of water, all those things that I don't
limiting
do.
Your alcohol intake, exactly. Which is not happening for me, but... those types of things, right? Like
is there some truth towards supplements? Are we going supplement crazy these days and people start talking about take this and do this? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think the general sense with supplements is that, if you're eating a really well-balanced diet, you know, you're eating healthy.
Yeah.
You know, that's really where you want to get your nutrients from. Thinking like your omegas, your good fatty acids, that's what you want to bring in, things that are brain healthy, antioxidants, things like that. That's what you want to focus on. And yes, everybody's hitting the nail on the head here, where it really is about, like, prevention. Mm-hmm. And it really has to do with novelty. Like, you need to challenge yourself, and you will lose, like, brain function over time. There's no question about it. But the more novelty you can put into your life based in, like, cognitive and physical, I think there's a big piece that's not discussed enough, is how important physical fitness and physical activity is with neurological health. Getting the good neurotransmitters being developed in your brain, like dopamine. I know there's lots of discussions around dopamine right now, but having those happy, those positive, those good neurotransmitters.
Well, how do we get that without social media?
What do you mean? Is there another way to do it? I didn't think there was. You know, exercise is a big one.
I think interaction with people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? Outdoors, nature,
walking
around. Sure. These are all good things to do, right?
Absolutely.
That don't involve devices.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You got it. We have a really cool opportunity right now through funding from the Ontario Trillium Foundation to bring in a registered dietitian that's consulting to our organization for the next year. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she's creating specialized meal plans for our clients in both our assisted living program, so in our group homes, as well as our community clients.
Will she go culturally?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
Because I had an issue with that with my mom, right? When we had a PSW starting, and that PSW was not, I was debating with my siblings, and I just said, I think the issue is that she's not preparing Portuguese food for her.
Right.
And then all of a sudden she started preparing Portuguese food and my mom was not so aggressive, right? Yeah. And that's why I bring up the cultural side of things. I think that it's there.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'll give her a quick plug here and just thank her, Nisha Gupta. She's from Hello Nutrition. She's with us for a year. Like Andrew was saying, we're looking to customize like meal plans. But with that, with a very specific focus on like the neurological health.
Yeah.
So we're using diet. Not only are we using like behavioral programs and exercise and other pieces, but we're also using like nutrition to help heal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If she's got time, I'd love to have her on the show to talk about it. Cause that's a big thing. I don't like seeing trace people with Monster and these kinds of foods, and they're just like, you know, I'm not knocking coffee places or whatever like that, but they have this routine of eating a certain bagel and a coffee and double and all that crap, and I'm like, this is eventually going to do something to you, mentally and physically, so just be aware of it.
And for you know, for the field, being in the trades, like you need to put the right fuel in your body. You know, you need it. Not only is it mentally like taxing, right, the work that you do, you've got a lot of calculations and a lot of specific things that you have to do and work out, problem solving. I think it's a very creative field, and but also you want to feed your body properly. You want, you know, your bones, your joints, your ligaments. You want to minimize inflammation in the body. So diet is a big key.
You'll appreciate it even in your 20s and 30s, and you're on site. You're a lot more aware. And then accidents won't happen, and then you won't be having to deal with other issues down the line.
Absolutely,
right?
100%.
But the education is working. If you look at your own kids,
it's getting out there, right?
It is. And you know, you look at drinking and driving. I don't know the stats, but I know my kids. They're not doing it.
It's the texting and driving that I have a major problem with now. I don't even care, because I agree with you that I think we've grown up on the drinking and driving.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We don't do it, and anybody around anybody that is potentially going to do it speaks up.
That's right.
It's not a
acceptable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But now the texting thing is a major issue, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I bet you not before long. I mean, I have an insurance app, and they can tell that I'm texting if I'm driving.
Oh, yesterday's show. Right? Don't worry about that. If you got a car that talks to you or a car that is connected to you, they're already bringing up all that data.
Right.
They're already compiling all that data.
So I think not before long, I think your phones will probably be shut off once you get in a moving vehicle,
which
won't be hurt.
Yeah, I think that should be the case, right?
That's right.
Just give me my music. That's how simple as that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not worth the risk. And hopefully with the technology and everything developing the way it is and the cars in the future, I mean, you know, it'll be intuitive enough to know and shut it off. My phone has a driving setting, so it knows as soon as I'm in the vehicle, text messaging, everything just gets automatically shut off. I have that enabled. I don't want that, you know, that carrot dangled in front of me. I don't want that temptation to say, oh, my wife just sent me a message, or, you know, or Ashley sent me a message.
It's a notification, being aware of it and having to look at it at that split second.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. It's funny how I kind of miss from my youth watching those crash tests, and you see the dummies and the reactions on the body and how that head just would dance.
Yeah.
And I don't think that we see that nowadays. I don't think car automakers, like, they don't sell or they don't share that information.
No.
But we just assume, since we have curtain airbags and everything's
that we're
protecting
safe.
Us. Yeah. I mean, I've seen safety vests out of Japan or China, maybe, that for elderly and also trace people, that you fall, it just expands and all of a sudden you got a cushion now. So they're testing all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, okay, that seems practical, and for elderly people, if they're going to fall, then they have a cushion. But I mean, I would want to see more of that from the automakers, where show us exactly what's happened to modern day cars. Because when you're driving today, 150 doesn't feel like 150 anymore.
No.
When I was a kid, and you're driving 100, it felt like you were in a rocket ship. Now you're driving 150. Not that I've been driving 150, but it just feels, it doesn't feel fast.
That's
the thing about it. But I'd like to see what happens to that dummy in that situation, because something must be happening. I'm just assuming, right?
Definitely.
Yeah, the MVA vehicle accidents are substantial, right? I mean, there's no other way to stay. I mean, we're publicly funded. We don't, we typically take people that have been in MVA accidents much further down the line, because they're usually working through insurance and a lot of private. I've had the privilege as well to be on the private side and see just how much of it comes through. There's so many head injuries that come from motor vehicle accidents. It's astounding how just, it would perplex you to, you know, people combing their hair, brushing their teeth, doing makeup.
Oh, I've seen people eating cereal. Right. I've seen all kinds makeup. Of stuff. Yeah, like there's, you just, it's like they're just, oh, I got time. I'm in traffic. That's just how it looks, right? But you might cause an accident. You might hurt somebody or worse, right?
Yeah, and I mean, one of the cases that always sticks out to me that I worked with, this young gentleman, really nice man and family, young guy in his 20s, and he was driving home. He'd been drinking, and he was on his phone, veered off the road, hit a telephone pole, a hydro pole, and it came down on top of his vehicle. And with the electricity or whatever it was, the vehicle itself, it lit on fire. And he sustained third-degree burns on 70% of his body. He was lucky to be alive. He was dragged out of the vehicle by EMS, sustained, you know, massive injuries, brain injuries, you know, extensive third-degree burns. And just to see the years, you know, of recovery that he had in front of him and the pain and the torment that this young guy went through is... I just couldn't imagine. Yeah. You know, that text message that you get isn't worth it.
No, and, like, we get one life. Simple as that, right? That's so, I never even shared what the website or how to contact you guys. Yeah.
Sure. So our website is www.mindforward.org.
Okay.
And we're on social media. We're on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is @mindforwardbis. So follow us, like us. We're going through a bit of a website revamp and a brand refresh, shall we say. So the logo, the current logo that you see, will be changing over the next couple of months. So we're really excited.
Working on it right now?
Yeah, we're working on it as we speak. So we're really excited to launch that. And that's coming along with building that community awareness and really giving MindForward a presence in the community. We want everyone to look at our logo and say, that's MindForward.
Nice.
Yeah. We need people to know we're here. That's a challenge, right? Yeah. And, you know, for any of the listeners, please, like if you, you know, your loved ones, you know anybody that's suffered a concussion or, you know, concerns around head injuries, you know, like please act on it, you know, contact us, get your GP
involved.
Don't
ignore it. Doesn't matter how little it was or how simple you thought it may have been.
No, follow up with it, you know, and you know, we want you to be part of our community, you know. We don't want you to suffer by yourself. We don't want you to be alone. And
but get them to a doctor first.
Yes. No, right. For sure, for sure. Yeah. Start that process, and then that's not that difficult to do. And then again,
I want to add that, actually, it's very fitting because tomorrow is the first day of June, and June happens to be Brain Injury Awareness Month. So it's our busiest month of the year. We're out in the community. On June 4th, we're going to be lighting up the clock tower at City Hall in Mississauga. So we're going to be having an event that evening, 4 p.m. So if anybody's in Celebration Square, pass by and say hello. But it's really our opportunity to spread awareness about
that's
brain
tomorrow
injury. June 4th. June 4th. That'll be Tuesday.
Okay, that's Tuesday evening. Okay, cool.
And when we get the new T-shirts, we'll make sure you get one.
XL, please.
Okay.
Some people give me their version of an XL or a large, and I'm like, I'm not going Christina Aguilera, you know what I mean? Okay. So
it's like, you can pull it off.
No. Not at my age. We got to do the 12 questions. You guys ready for this?
Yeah. Okay.
Sure.
We'll just go through the whole table. We'll start off with Ashley, I guess.
Okay.
What is your favorite construction word or phrase?
Delay.
Mine's, I think this is one word. Oh, shit.
Yeah. Pretty much.
So I tied it back to brain injury. I put foundation because just like in construction, a strong foundation is really essential to brain injury recovery.
It's good.
How am I going to follow that up? That's not fair. That's not right.
There's 12.
Yeah, fair enough. Favorite construction word? I'm going to go with supply chain. I hear that all the time.
Favorite tool, guys? What's your favorite tool? Doesn't have to be a physical tool. It could be anything.
No, your least favorite.
Least favorite tool.
Any kind of saw, because they freak me out that I'm going to cut my hand off or something.
Can't happen.
I'm cheating a bit. Mine's an Allen key because you can never find it when you need it.
Unless you go to IKEA and buy something and you have too many of them.
That's right.
Mine is duct tape because it's a quick fix. But long term, it's
duct tape is completely useless. I have no idea why it exists on this world.
That's right. I had to fix everything with duct tape. I don't know why everybody's just shouting down duct tape
and
here.
It's hard to get duct tape off. It leaves like a gross film.
The grime, yeah, I know.
Yeah, residue, yeah. My least favorite tool, I'm going to, you know, the wrong terminology here, but that star screwdriver. I don't know why we have them. Who wants them?
I love them.
Why do we use stars?
Europe, that's why.
Give me a square. Just give me a square. What is that, a Robertson?
Tell that to the Americans. They hate the Robinson.
That's right.
Well,
because why? It was invented by a Canadian.
That's why it works.
It's true. Just don't tell the
Shots
Americans.
Fired. Fair enough. Fair
what
enough.
Do you guys miss from your childhood?
My grandma.
My father.
Summer vacations.
That smell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it seemed like it was so long, that last day of school. You're like, the summer was ahead of us. It felt like a year.
Yeah.
You guys are killing me with this. I'll try to keep it in check. My mom.
Mm-hmm. What construction sound do you guys love?
A drill.
A staple gun.
A saw. Like a hand saw? Cutting wood.
Yeah.
Old school.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. I love the hand saw. Yep.
Hand saw. Favorite beverage?
Gin.
Rum.
Just gin straight?
Gin and soda.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Rum.
Rum? Wait, which kind of rum?
Dark rum.
Appleton? Or?
I'm open to... As long as I'm getting older, I'm getting more expensive rum.
I had a guess and you'd bring me some banana rum and it was good.
Oh, yeah? Nice.
From Barbados, I think it was. Yeah.
Nice.
I brought it with me. It's a triple shot espresso. A latte, sorry. Triple espresso latte.
I'm a whiskey guy.
Which one?
Right now, I'm loving just the 40 Creek double barrel.
Yeah, that's a good one, actually. It's a really good one. What turns you on and off in construction?
On would be like new projects and new routes and things like that. And then off would be all the delays.
On for me would be work being on time, on budget, and on quality.
Never happens. The quality, yes.
And then off would be change orders.
Comes from the clients. Yeah.
Not always.
It's true. Majority.
I have to say, like a perfectly level beam, and I just want to quickly share a story because we just had our first daughter, like newborn, setting up the nursery, and we wanted to do board and batten in the nursery, and my husband did it by hand, and he's not in construction, and he did a phenomenal job.
On the ceiling?
On the walls.
On the walls.
The board and batten, okay. Right? So he's a bit of a perfectionist, and I remember him calling me into the room one day and saying that horizontal beam is not perfectly straight. And I looked at it, and I was like, it looks perfectly straight to me. It's not. And I said, don't take it off. You've already mounted it. Like, don't touch it. Okay, no problem.
You took it off.
Took the whole thing off and started over again. It was terrible torture. It's beautiful. It's my favorite room in the house, even though my kids are older now, but... the beam has to be perfectly level. And least
what was off.
That other, least off would be, delays in construction.
Just delays.
Yeah,
I think mine would be actually one of the same. I like to swing a hammer around myself a little bit, but I love the creativity piece in construction. I love that. I hate, running into that roadblock where it's just like, this isn't going to work or this is a problem. But then I love that opportunity to be creative and think about, how are we going to solve that? How are we going to work around that?
Yeah. Favorite vehicle, any mode of transportation?
Dodge Ram.
I like my car, Lincoln Corsair.
I love the Tesla S model.
Vehicle, any mode of transportation? I'm going on a snowmobile, man.
We've had all kinds. We've had the space shuttle. What profession other than your own would you guys like to attempt one day?
I'd like to be a farmer.
Construction.
Really?
Yeah, I would. I'd like to try it. But then the next question was, what profession would you not like to do?
Yeah.
It was construction.
That's what I mean. You're going to get on site and get off the site.
Yeah.
I would probably take a stab at interior design. It's a passion of mine.
I initially went to school for teaching, so I'd say that if I was going to go down another path, it'd be actually utilizing that and teach.
What level are we talking about?
I like kids. I like
elementary.
Yeah.
Okay.
Elementary. Yep.
And what you guys would not like to do?
When I was a kid, I always wanted to be a veterinarian, and then now that I'm older, I realize that's a good thing I didn't do it because I wouldn't be able to.
I wouldn't be able to
put animals down.
Nope.
Or
nope.
Like I can't. So,
no.
A veterinarian.
So yours is construction?
Yep, mine's answered. I
was thinking hard about this. Telemarketing.
To be
on the other side of that call.
God bless those guys.
More than ever.
Oh, yeah.
I just hang up. Yeah. I don't know.
That's okay. That's a tough.
Just don't fraud. They're scammers usually now, but
yeah. For me, a dentist. I would not want to do that.
Mm. Last question. If heaven exists, what would you guys like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
Bronx has been waiting for you.
Mine would be, dude, you're really late. Oh, by the way, here's Finn. Yeah. You know, which is our dog.
Yeah, similar. You know, you've had a good life. Welcome. Everyone is waiting for you here.
Yeah, I'm hoping they're going to say, we made an exception. You can come in.
You start to wonder, what did I exactly do? I don't understand. Yeah, Put me on that list there. Guys, thank you so much.
Thanks for organizing this
and having you guys in here and chatting this. And I hope it does some help and people listen. And I'm always yelling at these guys that are listening and saying, don't take it for granted. It's split second. Something could happen.
Yep. Yeah.
Just be safe. And if you see somebody else not being safe, speak up.
Call us. Bring us in. We'll do an in-service. We'll do some education pieces for you.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Give us a call. Yeah. Anything we can do to help.
I'm pretty sure somebody will take. Yeah, for sure they will take you up on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'd love to.
Okay. That's great. And the information, you guys want to share the information again? Let everybody know?
Yeah, our website, www.mindforward.org, and social media at mindforwardb, like Bob, IS.
Thank you. That's it. We're all done. Thank you. Thanks very much. We're out of here.